Chris Hipkins is kindly with us for our fortnightly cordial. Hey, Chris, tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe, Dale. Great to talk to you.
Thanks. Well, you'd know Michael Baker pretty well, man. You know, with how we adapted, pivoted, and had to with that global challenge that was coronavirus. We're just talking about Hunter virus, Chris, and its potential to spread. While it doesn't seem as though it's going to be another coronavirus, even so, we are better prepared now for such circumstances than we would have been prior to the arrival of coronavirus. When you sort of add up our nation's response and indeed parliamentary response, what stands out for you? Because a lot of what we did copped criticism and continues too, but we were working on the fly at that time and you were front and centre. What thoughts you on Hunter virus and our ability to counteract similar challenges in the future, Chris?
I thought Michael's observation at the end there was quite correct. You know, while people didn't necessarily enjoy and certainly don't seem to enjoy in retrospect some of the things that we did in response to COVID-19 as a country, the results do speak for themselves. You know, we had one of the lowest death rates in the world during the pandemic itself. And even since then, one of the lowest rates of excess mortality. We haven't really seen an increase in death in New Zealand because of COVID-19. And so even other countries, as they came out the other side, who had done well through the pandemic, as they came out the other side of it, they saw their death rates going up as people got COVID-19 in the community and so on. We didn't have that in New Zealand. So I think, you know, the thing that probably stands out for me is that Kiwis were willing to make the sacrifice required to keep people alive during a pandemic. And that probably does bring me to the first part of your question, which is, I don't think you can conclude that we're better prepared for another pandemic in the future than we were for the last one. If anything, we're potentially going backwards in that regard. The current government have cut a lot of the teams working in the Ministry of Health on things like pandemic planning. A lot of our public service machinery work around pandemic planning and around, you know, building greater resilience to cope with unexpected events, that's actually being run down by the government at the moment. So I'm not sure it's fair to conclude that we're better prepared if we faced a similar event in the future.
Well, talking about the public service, we know that there's been massive job losses there, and Australia still looms as one of the biggest threats to our economic recovery. Speaking of which, they talked a big talk when they came together or cobbled together this three-headed taniwha or coalition government. And of course, you, Jacinda, the Labor Party were to blame for all of our economic woes. That has not ceased. The line is still being used as we're 6 months out from an election. They've had 2.5 years to try and right the ship. Admittedly, there have been some challenges there, destabilising global economies and the like, Chris. But we're getting a bit hoo-ha with this constant reference backwards. It's all been your fault, and Jacinda's not here, so you have to cop it from this outfit. And now we go into a budget with predicted inflation on the climb and economic recovery further and further away. Do you still want to take the reins under such times of economic uncertainty?
Well, we're 3 years into this government now, and they're still looking for people to blame for problems rather than trying to solve them. You know, the country is in a difficult situation. There wasn't a difficult situation coming out the other side of the pandemic. We saw a global spike in inflation. And the National Party decided to say that that was all the government's fault and nothing to do with international factors, when in reality our inflation rate in New Zealand was about the same as every other country in the world was experiencing. Now, there are, you know, some were higher, some were lower, but on average, New Zealand was right about the middle. So, you know, it was an international phenomenon post-pandemic, and there wasn't a lot New Zealand could do about that. Now we're seeing a spike in inflation caused by the war in Iran. And, you know, this government also have to accept that, you know, that's going to happen. There's a limited amount they can do to control that. But what they're doing in order to try and demonstrate that it was the last government's fault the last time is they're not helping New Zealanders through it. And, you know, they've bought their own, they're believing their own spin that our COVID response was a mistake, despite the fact that at the time they were saying we should have been spending more money. And as a result, they're not doing things to help New Zealanders through the current crisis that we're facing.
Tēnā koe. I'm enthused and buoyed by the fact that we hear that Jenny Anderson, your education spokesperson for Te Pāti Labour, is committed to reinstating the expectation that schools share aspects of the treaty in a normalised and seamless way. It's not a standalone subject, but this demand by the coalition government that there is no pressure at all on schools to incorporate aspects of the treaty into their day-to-day operations is galling for Tangata Whenua interests. So what do you make of the call from Jenny that Labour will reinstate where we're at the moment should you be successful in November?
Well, I think it's really important, and I think that schools are doing, most schools are continuing to do it anyway, despite the fact the National Party have changed the law. And it shows that the schools have got a better handle on what's actually required here than the current government do. This is a very anti-treaty government. You know, from the treaty principles debate to the regulatory standards bill, which they've passed into law, which undermines the treaty, to the fact that they're now trying to remove or edit treaty clauses in all legislation without proper consultation or consideration of the impacts of that. They've just introduced a new citizenship test that doesn't even mention the treaty in it. You know, this is a government that basically is trying to write the treaty out of our history. And that's a huge mistake. The treaty is a source of strength for New Zealand. It actually should be a source of unity for New Zealand. And I just think they don't see that.
Tēnā koe. I had an earlier conversation with Mike Smith. You'd be across that one too, I guess, Chris. You know, here's a guy who thinks that his human rights were contravened using our legal system as it was at the time to put a challenge into what he considered to be major emitters. Now, the Supreme Court saw the merits of his approach and were prepared to hear the case. Then all of a sudden the Minister of Justice steps into the fold and cuts that that line available to Mike off at its knees. What did you make of Paul Goldsmith's move yesterday, Chris?
Well, I think you can approach it on a number of levels. You can look at, you know, what he's arguing in terms of the substance of his arguments, but you can also look at the process here by the government. And I think on the process side of things, it's just outrageous what they've done. There's a case before the courts. They may not have liked what might come out of that case, but at the very least, they should wait and see what the courts decide before deciding to legislate to change the law to prevent that case from proceeding forward. It's very, very bad lawmaking. You could say that it's an abusive legal position to change the law in the middle of a court case to extinguish somebody's, you know, right to go to the courts. Mike has established his right to go to the court. He deserves a day in court, and he deserves the government not to try and overturn that. If they disagree with the outcome of the court case, and then they decided to change the law because they disagreed with what the courts had decided, that would actually be a different thing. Governments have done that in the past. But to extinguish someone's right to go to court is a really big, in my view, a big no-no.
Tēnā koe. Many of us accept that at times the best thing to do about something is nothing. But there have been criticisms that Labour aren't coming forward with policies, agendas that will solicit the votes needed to change the government. While it feels as though the coalition government is somewhat imploding and the polls would attest to that, is it a deliberate strategy from the Labour Party to keep your gunpowder dry and just watch falling support for the coalition government without necessarily needing to advance novel, innovative approaches to how politics might work in a new arrangement? What would you say of or to people who think that you're playing the politics of nothingness?
Primarily, my focus is making sure that the promises that I make are promises I can deliver on. And right now, when the government haven't yet delivered their budget, we don't know what the economic forecasts for the country are. We don't know what the country is going to be able to afford. It wouldn't be responsible for me to go out there and make a whole lot of big spending promises to people. So I'm talking about the sort of government that I want to lead, the sort of standards that I want to set. I've been talking very openly about that. But the actual specific policy commitments, you know, we'll spend more money on this, we'll spend less money on that. That really does have to wait till after the government have done their budget so that we can then do ours.
That makes sense too. What's happened with Te Pāti Māori? And I know that, you know, politicians, quite understandably, are less inclined to comment about what is happening in other parties. I respect that. But bearing in mind that there is the potential for some sort of collaborative approach, it might not pan out that way. I understand that, Chris, but it might. And so working together is not beyond the realms of possibility, likewise with the Greens. So this shuffle within the Māori Party provides opportunities, of course, in the Māori electorates for Labour, who are well poised and positioned here. But what would you say about the internal ructions, if you can call it that? There'll be other challenges for Te Pāti Māori, but nevertheless, as a leader of a party that may one day need each other, how closely are you monitoring the situation, and are you at all concerned about what is happening internally for them?
I've sort of tried to stay out of Te Pāti Māori's internal difficulties. I said some time ago, I thought they really needed to get in the room and sort themselves out. And I still think that now, because the risk for all those who want to see a change of government at the next election is that instability within the Māori Party actually sends a message to the voters who want change, that a changed government might not be any different to the one that they've got now, in the sense that it could also offer a lot of instability. So if the Māori Party wants to see a change of government, then sorting themselves out is now an urgent priority. When you've still got MPs speculating about whether they're going to stay with the party, you've got one MP already and another MP leaving to set up their own party, it actually potentially drives voters away from the message of change, which is what we need. And that's why I've been really clear. Labour's going to go out and compete in all seven of the Māori electorates. We want to win those because our number one focus at this election is to get rid of this government. And that doesn't seem to be the number one focus of the Māori Party.
Should you be successful, you would therefore find yourself in similarly challenging economic conditions. What would Labour do that is better under these challenging circumstances than the crew that are in there now?
Well, that's exactly why we're waiting until after the government's budget before releasing significant new policy. We've got to see what the choices are that the government are going to make first. There are different choices that we would make as a government, but we've got to see the current government's choices before we can really set those out. And, you know, that's now only a couple of weeks away, and that's good. I think everybody's looking forward to seeing the budget. I don't think many people are looking forward to what's in it. But let's see what the government are going to do, what's their proposed solution. And then from there, we can build out and say, this is how we would do things differently. But I'm not going to fall into the trap that they did when they were in opposition of saying, look, I'm just going to reverse everything that the current government are doing, because that just will take the whole country backwards yet again and set back any potential, you know, recovery, any potential brighter future that we might have. It'll just set it backwards.
Obviously, Māori are concerned. At least we can still free dial our whānau in Aussie, but they're heading away in droves, and many of them won't be coming back. Some will, like me, but others will be there for the long term. How disappointing is it for you? And of course, everyone who leaves is replaced by somebody from another country, and thus the immigration debate and the race card in politics emerges as well. But it's a challenging dynamic to see so many of our people with get up and go getting up and going.
Well, I got to say, I've been absolutely appalled by the rhetoric from the likes of Shane Jones and, to a lesser extent, Winston Peters, particularly around immigrants from India and the outright racism that's been stoking up. I think they should both be ashamed of themselves. Our Indian migrant community contribute a huge amount to New Zealand, and they shouldn't be subjected to that. And, you know, I think Māori listening to this up and down the country know what it's like to be subjected to racism, because far too often Māori have been on the receiving end of racism in New Zealand. And we've got to say we're not going to tolerate that, but we should also say we're not going to tolerate racism towards our migrant communities either. I want to create a country where everybody who lives in New Zealand can create a good future for themselves, where we give our people a reason to stay in New Zealand and build their futures in New Zealand. It is probably my number one driver, the thing that gets me out of bed every morning to wake up and do these early interviews with all of you guys, is the fact that I want to know that my kids and all their peers have a reason to stay in New Zealand. And even if they go off and do their big OE and, you know, go and do some work and some study overseas, and, you know, that'd be a good thing for them, but they want to come back. And I see far too many young New Zealanders packing up and leaving with no intention of coming back. And we've got to give them a reason to want to come back.
Tēnā koe. And thank you for your time today, Chris. Look forward to our next kōrero to Chief. Ngā mihi.
Ngā mihi. Great to talk to you, Dale.
Thank you. Chris Hipkins with us on alternate Wednesdays.